Thank you very much. I'd like to have in mind today my cousin who passed away yesterday. It was a great Marbitz Torah by Nassen Hertzke, Zecharno Levracha, Shama should have an Aliyah. Thank you very much for coming this morning and for leaving your houses on this cold morning on Hanukkah to talk a little bit about Hanukkah, because as you know, Hanukkah is a time when we are uniquely focused on our houses and on our homes. And that's what I'd like to try to talk for a few minutes about. It seems to be something which is hinted at throughout our earlier sources. For example, if you look at the sheet, so we know the Talmud tells us that the mitzvah of Hanukkah in its primary form, before we come on to the Mahadrins and the Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin that we all do today, of lighting candles that correspond to the nights, it starts off mitzvahs Hanukkah ner ish ubeso. It seems to bring the household into the mitzvah in already a unusual way. And the Rambam, in source number 2, Hilchos Megillah v'Chanukah Dalet Aleph, the Rambam seems to have the formulation even more starkly, because the Rambam writes, Kamaneros humadlik b'Chanukah mitzvasa shiyeh kol bayis v'bayis madlik ner echad. Not only that, like Gemara's language of lighting per household, but seemingly more like the household itself has the obligation to light. And it's a very striking language, and there are clues throughout the Rishonim, throughout the Talmud, that seem to point to the house more than it does to any individual. Finally leading some of the Achronim, such as the Sfas Emes, in his commentary to Maseches Shabbos, to ask, what's up here? Is there perhaps an unusual formulation? Is this a mitzvah which is not directed at individuals, but rather at houses? Is this mitzvah like mezuzah? Is it more than mezuzah? Is it less than mezuzah? There's a lot of curiosity about this mitzvah because of the language that we find throughout the early sources. And it comes up here and there. So, for example, when the Shulchan Aruch tells us that there is a custom that has become widespread and universal and binding, so much so that we even make a bracha on it to light Hanukkah candles in shul. But it's quick to point out that that does not exempt you from your obligation. You go to shul and you hear a bracha recited on the candles there, but you still have to light at home. And the question of why that is, so the Vilna Gaon quotes from the Rivash that because it's not your house, you can't fulfill your obligation in the shul. No matter how at home many of us feel in shul, still that's not your personal house. You still have to light again at home. And another clue that there's some special connection, if you look at source number 4, raises the question about a practice that we don't really see so much nowadays. But the Gemara tells us that there is a notion of a birchas haroeh, that if somebody sees a Hanukkah candle, they're supposed to recite a bracha. And the reason you don't really find this observed nowadays is because the assumption the Rishonim make is that this is only for someone who has not yet lit their own Hanukkah candle, or has not had someone in their household light on their behalf, or most assume even if they will later have someone light in their household or light on their behalf, or they will themselves light. So since most of us do fulfill the mitzvah in some way, we don't often see this coming up, but theoretically, the Gemara says there is a bracha for someone who just sees the Hanukkah candle even without lighting it. So Tosfos raises the question that this is very unusual. Where do you find this anywhere else? What other mitzvah do you have where there's a bracha assigned to one who simply sees the object of the mitzvah? And Tosfos has two suggestions, but one of the suggestions, which is a little cryptic and subject to a lot of interpretation, it's the middle line in source 4. V'gam mishum sheyesh kama b'nei adam she'ein lehem batim ve'ein b'adam l'kayim ha-mitzvah. Because we need to include the people who don't have houses, and it's not in their hands to fulfill the mitzvah. So as Tosfos was saying, that the house performs the mitzvah, that you need a house to perform the mitzvah. The mitzvah does apply, doesn't apply. If you don't have a house, it's not clear. There's a lot of debate about what exactly is the full intent of this Tosfos. But it's one more step saying that there seems to be a connection between the household, the house specifically, and the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. And you find again throughout the generations, those who ask, for example, what about two roommates living in the same house who aren't related? Do they need to light separately? They perhaps light as one because they're sharing the same house, even if they are two disparate individuals. The Pnei Yehoshua in his commentary to the Talmud, noticing that there's something unusual here, that normally we say, even if a mitzvah could be fulfilled through someone else's effort, we say, mitzvah bo yoser mi b'shlucho, that we would rather you do a mitzvah yourself rather than have someone do it on your behalf, and we don't seem to see that in the laws of Chanukah, and that's also unusual. Is there something here that focuses less on your personal effort and more on the household? This again is a question that's being raised throughout the generations. What's going on? Is there something here that is uniquely house-focused? And on the other hand, you have some Rishonim who seem to suggest the other way. The Ran, in his commentary to Maseches Pesachim, actually, I think we have that here also, yes, the Ran here in Shabbos, on source number 5, where he talks about why it is that we have the institution of Achsonoi, that somebody who's a guest at someone else's house is supposed to contribute some token amount to them while lighting Chanukah candles. And there the Ran suggests, differently than others, it's because even though this person is away, doesn't have their own household, doesn't mean that they're exempt from their Chanukah. So he understands it specifically to highlight that it's not tied into the house. Similarly, there is a discussion in the Kolbo, one of the Rishonim, who discusses, what if you have two houses? Do you have to light Chanukah candles in both houses? And he assumes yes, but he says it's only because of chshad, because as the Talmud raises this consideration in another context, that we're afraid somebody's going to look at your house and think that there's nobody lighting Chanukah candles anywhere. So if we have two possible locations that could confuse people, where do you actually live? So then, to be safe, we need to have candles in both locations. But he seems to emphasize it is not that there's actually an obligation on both houses, it's just so people shouldn't wonder. So we find throughout the generations a number of statements, a number of questions, a number of suggestions that address the fact that there seems to be a focus on a house or on a home throughout in Hilchos Chanukah. And one way or another, whether we say it's a mitzvah of the household or whether we say that it's a mitzvah on the individual through the household, it seems to be clear that it is connected to the house in some way. So, for example, Shulchan Aruch tells us that there is a mitzvah to light al Pesach Beso, like the Gemara says, through the opening of one's household. And we find that we need to ascertain where one's household is in order to figure out where one ideally should be lighting. So that's a part of the whole discussion here in the yeshiva. It's a very big discussion. If you can light in the dormitory, if you can light in the lobby, if you can light in the apartment lobby, if you can light in this location or that location. And there are a number of factors that go into that discussion. Part of it is Pirsumei Nisa, part of it is where will it be visible. But a lot of the discussion revolves around the issue, what is your residence? That somehow it has to be connected to your residence that's identified with you, and the location that's too far removed from anything that's identifiable as your residence becomes a problem for Neres Chanukah. So it seems inarguable that there's some focus on the household, and simply a question is it that the home has the mitzvah, or is it that the individual has a mitzvah, but he needs a household in order to do it? So, for example, Rav Soloveitchik and his Shiurim on Sukkah, you can find in Rabbi Reichman Sefer of Rav Soloveitchik's Shiurim on Sukkah, on the Tosfos that we mentioned, source number 4, And Daf Mem Vav. So the Tosfos also asked a question we didn't note before. The Tosfos asks, if you want to say that we have a mitzvah to make a bracha, even if you only see it, when it comes to Ner Chanukah, because some people don't have houses, well, why don't we do the same thing for mezuzah? Why don't we say that anyone who sees a mezuzah should make a bracha, because maybe some people don't have houses and won't be able to put up a mezuzah? So Tosfos raises that question. It's a few words here in that Tosfos. Zol tikshule mezuzah, that we have to give an answer that's going to still leave room for the difference between Chanukah and mezuzah. So Rav Soloveitchik, in his shiurim, he understood, he said that it's different. So when it comes to mezuzah, you don't have to have a mezuzah. If you have a house, then you have to have a mezuzah. If you don't have a house, you don't have to have a mezuzah. But when it comes to Neris Chanukah, maybe you do have to light Neris Chanukah, but you need a house in order to do it. So in order to include those who don't have houses, we instituted this Ekra Bracha of one who should see it. And it's different than mezuzah. If you don't have a house, okay, so then you don't put a mezuzah, you're not obligated to. But Chanukah, we need to find an opportunity to fulfill it. So therefore, we create this extra bracha to include those who don't have houses, not a priority when it comes to mezuzah, but yes, the priority when it comes to Chanukah. So this question of where exactly does the residence come in is part of the very high-flying discussion that pertains to people who are traveling over Chanukah. Let's say this question comes up all the time. In the modern era, very often people say they are flying overnight. They're going to Israel or somewhere similarly far away. They're going to leave their house in the afternoon, and the entire night they're going to be in an airplane. So what should they do about lighting in that context? So, spoiler alert, do not try that at home. Do not try that away from home. Do not light candles in an airplane. It's not safe. It's not legal. It's not a good idea. Sorry? They will definitely not let you. You'll be carried away by Homeland Security very quickly. But it's not a good idea on any level, on the highest level, on the lowest level. It's not something that you should do. But there are poskim who have considered it. Believe it or not, the question has been discussed. Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, in an article that was published in his journal, Darchei Torah, Darchei Hora, his journal associated with his yeshiva, so he explains three reasons why you should not do this. So first and foremost, it's dangerous. It's dangerous, and you are stealing from the airline that forbids you from doing this. It's not something that one should think he could get away with, that there's any value in getting away with, that this is something which causes all kinds of problems. Again, if you want to spend the rest of Chanukah in lockup somewhere, then probably much longer than Chanukah, it's... Yes, every reason it's completely dangerous and forbidden and stolen. Yes? Electric motor might be a good idea as an etzah, or even just a flashlight, because the Iker mitzvah is one candle. So even if you have, so I think that's not a terrible suggestion, but certainly actual fire, for sure you should not do. The second reason, after that most important and already all-inclusive reason, is it has no potential of lasting half an hour, because the marshal will jump on you before it's there for 10 seconds. So we know that if a candle doesn't have enough oil to last long enough, then you're not yotzei with that. You are yotzei. The Gemara says, if you light a candle in good faith, thinking it could last for half an hour with enough oil and everything required to give it potential, so then if it happens to blow out after a few seconds, you are yotzei. But if it doesn't have enough oil in the first place, so then that's not going to work. So the Rishonim add that even if it does have enough oil, but it's very windy, so there's no chance of it lasting because the wind is going to blow it out right away, so then that's the same thing as not having enough oil. It doesn't have any possibilities. So Rav Asher Weiss adds that so too, if it's not a question of wind or oil, but it's a question of the whole FBI jumping on you, then for sure that's not even a potential mitzvah. There's nothing to accomplish on that level. But one more reason to add to the mix is the question of whether it even makes sense to light on an airplane, considering that that is not your house. If it's not your house, so what would you even accomplish Is that something which can be connected to you? So presumably not, and that's the way that Rav Yashav also concluded, and Rav Asher Weiss leaned in that direction as well, that this is not something that has enough of an association with you that it's even potentially a mitzvah. If you don't, if you're not satisfied with the first reason, you're not worried about danger or about stealing from the airlines or about the fact that it's not going to be a potential length of time anyway. So on top of that, it's probably not enough of a connection to you. Now it happens to be there was a discussion in some of the earlier Achronim, earlier than that, the Maharsham and the Aruch HaShulchan, and others who considered the question of lighting on trains. And some did recommend lighting on trains. However, it's not clear, as Rav Asher Weiss notes, and as others discuss as well, that a train might be more your house than an airplane is. Especially back in the day when people were traveling in cars on trains, cars that were identified with them, and right, they would sleep on the train, and the car had their name on it. They were assigned to a specific car, as opposed to being cramped in a seat which doesn't have any semblance of a room, and where they could move you in a second from one seat to the next. So that's even less than a train. And even were one to assume that a train does have some semblance of your residence, a plane very likely is less than that, significantly less than that, and therefore it's very hard to argue that that's considered to be your place. Hi. Private jet, you have a better case to make that it might be your house. That's usually not the people who are asking for some reason, but usually that is a different kind of scenario as far as having a connection to you. Then you still have to figure out the safety issues. If it's safe to light a candle in an airplane. But as far as residence, that's the third of our factors, so if it's a private jet, that probably would be more shaykh to you than a seat on an airplane. There is also a discussion the poskim have, and most assume that similarly, because you need to have some kind of a residence, that soldiers in the Israeli army who are out in the field, or in any army who would be out in the field, and who are sleeping under the open stars, presumably also it wouldn't make sense for them to light out in the field, because that's also not considered to be any kind of a house, nor any residence that is associated with them. That was the view that most poskim took, that Tzitz Eliezer was a notable exception, but most assumed that that doesn't constitute any kind of a house that's either a house or connected to you, and therefore there as well, it didn't make sense to light. If one assumes that you do need to have a house, so then there was an interesting discussion, which Rav Asher Weiss also addressed in a separate essay as published in his Sefer on Chanukah, where he took issue with the position expressed by Rabbi Yashiv and by his son-in-law, Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, where they discussed the question of, if one doesn't have a house, so should we assume that they're obligated to rent a house or to try to buy a house for Hanukkah, because otherwise they won't have any potential to fulfill the mitzvah of Hanukkah? So they were inclined to say yes. Rav Asher Weiss thought not that way, because he thought that even if you say that it's more than mezuzah, that it's something that's actually a proactive obligation, that you need a house in order to do it, still, it could be anus. There are people who simply don't have the tools to perform a mitzvah. So even though, for example, let's say when it comes to tefillin, so tefillin we say is an active mitzvah, but if somebody doesn't have an arm, so then they're exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. So we can formulate a mitzvah as more of a proactive obligation, but there will still be people who are in a position that leaves them unable to fulfill the mitzvah. And he thinks that's true here as well. We wouldn't say that somebody has to buy or rent a house in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Rav Shmuel Eliezer Stern, in his Tshuva Shvi Ve'esh, he also discusses this position of Rav Yashiv and Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and he goes on to note, back to what we mentioned before, said that's what the Birchas Haro is for. That's why Chazal gave us this extra bracha for one who doesn't have a house, exactly for that point, in order to include someone who doesn't have a place to live, and therefore we wouldn't come to the conclusion that one's obligated to purchase a house for this, because we have these other methods of including people in the process. Conversely, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, another son-in-law of Rabbi Yashiv and one of his svarim. So he asks, what about the opposite? What if you want to exempt yourself from Ner Chanukah? So let's say if you have a house, but you want to be mafker it, you want to declare it ownerless, and you say, okay, I don't have a house, therefore I'm off the hook. So he explains, that's not going to work, because it's not about ownership. It's about having something that you can connect to, having a place that's identified with you, whether or not you own it in terms of monetary title is not necessarily relevant. And Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach made the same point. He says, we don't use definitions of ownership here for the purpose of Ner Chanukah. We don't necessarily use the same dimensions as mezuzah or other definitions of household. What we mean is having a location that identifies with you and that you can stay in. And he explains differently than we said before. That's why you have the institution of Achsanoi, the idea of a visitor buying in on some level to the house that he's visiting is to connect him to that household, even though clearly that's not going to be a majority share. If you give a few coins to the person who's hosting you, that's only a very, very small investment in the house. It's not going to qualify as ownership by any other definition, but perhaps that's enough to connect you to the household, and that's why we have such an institution. So there are a lot of fascinating discussions about how exactly the household plays a role, why exactly there is this emphasis on a home, on a house, and how it plays out. So why is that the case? You know, why is this mitzvah uniquely focused on a home or a household more than other mitzvahs? The one suggestion is, the Pnei Yehoshua writes in his commentary, that perhaps this is because of the Persumenisa. It's because we want to make a greater display to the public. So especially in the time of the Gemara when the lighting was outside. So outside one's house, that's the best way to project this out to the public. And we're going to define things by access to the public, so we're going to use the household as the way to identify that. Perhaps there are other explanations as well. Our own Rabbi J. David Bleich Shlita, in his Sefer Ben Asivas Halacha, has another suggestion that a few other contemporary authors also have. The Sefer Krue Moed also has this discussion. Now perhaps we could look to the Rambam. The Rambam, in his Igeres Kiddush Hashem, makes reference to a gezeira, which he said was well known, although it's not clear from other sources where we know this, but the Rambam talks about this. The Rambam says that at the time of the whole episode of Chanukah, one of the policies of the Greeks was that the Jews could not close their doors. They could not seclude themselves in their houses because they wanted to make sure they weren't fulfilling any mitzvot in secret. They didn't want to have them living a religious life in their houses and feel that they were safe from view. So therefore, they wouldn't allow them to close their doors. And perhaps one could suggest, as he writes there, that if indeed that is a part of what was going on Chanukah, that not only were the individuals a part of the whole experience, not only were they the ones who were being decreed upon, but the houses themselves were a part of the decree. So perhaps that's why when Chazal formulated the mitzvah, they attached it to the house in order to make the announcement that this house is free of that gezeira, this house is celebrating the fact that it's not a part of what was once upon a time the policy that we had to fight to overturn. But there's another approach one can take as well. And it's interesting to note that when we talk about the household, we made reference so far to a physical location, and that's certainly a part of the discussion, but it's also a focus on the family. And we find the family as part of the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Chanukah in an unusual way. We know that in addition, probably, to the idea of shlichus, to the notion of having somebody perform the mitzvah on your behalf. So if you're not going to be home, but you can have somebody go into your house and light candles there, so that's effective, and that we mentioned before prompts the question, why don't we say mitzvah bo yosum b'shlucho? Better, you should do it yourself. But when it comes to the You can have somebody light in your house. And there's a question, normally we say, even when it's possible to do something through someone else, we prefer you do it yourself. And the Pnei Yeshua raised the question, well, why don't we say that here? We seem to be equally okay with having somebody light on your behalf, which already suggests it's more about having candles in your house than it is about you personally lighting candles. But when it comes to family members, we seem to be even more okay with it. There's even a discussion that perhaps an onen can light on behalf of his family. An onen is somebody who, Rachmana Litzlan, is waiting for the funeral of a relative. So normally an onen is exempt from all mitzvos. So he shouldn't be able to perform mitzvos on behalf of himself or anyone else. But there is a discussion that perhaps have a situation where one member of the household as a onen, perhaps that member, this discussion of Leo Schlesinger has in one of his farim at length, that maybe the onen can light on behalf of the household even though he's exempt from mitzvos. The Shulchan Aruch also considers the possibility, based on the Baal HaYitr, uniquely here, that a child can light the menorah on behalf of their family, even if it's not yet a bar bas mitzvah, if it's the age of higia lechinuch, if it's the age when they're able to understand what the mitzvah is about, it could be that an older child who's not yet bar mitzvah can light on behalf of the family. And that seems to also reflect that it's not a personal mitzvah that the parent is asking the child to do on their behalf, but it's a household mitzvah. So as long as there's someone who's able to relate to it as a mitzvah, who's a part of the family, even if they're not technically obligated, like the onen or like a child, that may indeed fulfill the obligation. And we also find that the widespread custom is that even though we assume mahadrin mina mahadrin means that everyone in the family should light on their own or light for themselves, when it comes to spouses, we don't assume like that. The widespread practice is that there is one candle, one set of candles per married couple. And that reflects the idea of ishto kigufo, that we assume that spouses are as one, they're connected to each other. But you don't often find other halachos bringing this up. How often do you find, for practical purposes, that we say that between spouses there should only be one fulfillment of a mitzvah because of ishto kigufo? So Rav Shlomo Daichovsky, is a prominent dayan in Eretz Yisrael, has a discussion about this in one of his farim, Leiv Shomei L'Shlomo, where he suggests that that also is telling us there's something unusual here, that it's not a normal mitzvah, but there is something about the mitzvah that is family-oriented, and therefore a family unit lights together, so because a husband and wife are considered as one, therefore only one set of lighting is necessary between the two of them. Either one, whichever one is lighting, is going to fulfill the concept on behalf of the other. So perhaps that points to another aspect here of what exactly we're talking about. And there's a beautiful discussion about this in the Sefer Yunim B'Parsha that was written by Avram Heschel Reisman. It was published by his son, Beit Zvika Reisman, where he discusses in the Parsha, I think it's in last week's Parsha, he talks a little bit about the mitzvah of Chanukah. And he notes that the history and the concept of Chanukah is different than Purim, for example. One point that many observe contrasting Purim and Chanukah, we know that when it comes to Purim, there is a obligation, there's a mitzvah to have a Suda. And when it comes to Chanukah, so we have a recommendation of a Suda. It's nice to have a Chanukah party, a Chanukah meal, to have a Suda's mitzvah has much value to it, but we don't find it as an obligation. We find it disputed by Rishonim just what role a Suda on Chanukah has. It does not seem to have the same obligatory status that a Suda on Purim has. And one of the suggestions as to why that is that when it comes to Purim, so Purim, we celebrate a physical Yeshua, a physical salvation. We were threatened with elimination, we were threatened with death, so therefore we commemorate that with a physical celebration, a Suda, which is a gashmiistic mitzvah, a physical celebration. But when it comes to Chanukah, the danger was not as much physical as it was spiritual. They were trying to make us lose our Jewish identity, not necessarily threatening us physically, as much as trying to disconnect us from who we are spiritually. So therefore, that's how some explain this Suda has less of a place. We're not necessarily focusing as much on a physical celebration as on spiritual observances. And perhaps one could suggest, as Rav Reisman does, that also shifts the nature of the defense. That when it comes to a physical threat, okay, so the army fights that. So that's something which is addressed through physical means. But when it comes to a spiritual threat, so that requires a different approach. That's something that requires the whole family get together and connect to their history, connect to their group identity, and bring all of that effort together in order to uphold who they are spiritually, who they are culturally, who they are in a religious sense. And therefore, it's more of a focus that the whole family come together and marshal all of their personalities and all of their commitments in order to first to fight the war of Hanukkah and then to uphold and to celebrate the victory of Hanukkah. And perhaps for that reason, that's why there is a mitzvah to focus specifically on the household and within the household specifically on the family. So it's a particular privilege this morning to be able to see all of you come from your houses on Hanukkah, but particularly to have this joint session of the Kol Yom Rishon and Medreshet Yom Rishon. We can talk to the husbands and wives together, we can talk to the families together. Perhaps this topic is uniquely appropriate for that message, because in a sense, maybe that goes to the core of what Hanukkah is asking of us, and through that kind of family unity, we should be able to continue to uphold and to celebrate the message of what Hanukkah teaches us. So we'll just quickly review, and then I apologize, then I have to run out, but just to quickly review what we spoke about, we considered this question of why we find an unusual focus on the household when it comes to Hanukkah. We find the language of the Gemara, Ner Ishu Beso, and the Rambam's language even more focused, Al Kol Bayis V'Bayis, and the question the Acharonim such as the Sfas Emes and others raised, what's going on here? Is there an obligation on the household, or is it the person through the household? Is it like mezuzah? Is it more or less than mezuzah? What exactly is going on here? And we saw the Rivash that the Vilna Gaon quotes, that we don't fulfill the obligation in the shul because the shul is not our household. We saw the Tosfos that said that maybe we have a unique opportunity here to make a bracha even when seeing the menorah. We don't find that by other mitzvos. Maybe that's to include people who don't have houses, again suggesting that the house is a part of the mitzvah in a way that other things aren't. And we discussed how this comes up in a few other questions. The question, why don't we say mitzvah bo yosem yibishlucho? What about roommates who aren't related? Could they both light together because it's all one household? So all the Ron's comment is seemingly in the other direction, that somebody away from his house has to participate with their host because they're not exempt even though they're out of their house. And the Kolbo saying if you have two houses, you should light in both, but it's not actually an obligation. It's just because of avoiding suspicion. But one way or another, we find the mitzvah connected to the household. The Gemara telling us you light al Pesach Beso, and the whole discussion about dormitories, apartments, lobbies, and the like, all revolving around the question of what is most identifiable with you, in addition to factors of Pursuma Nisa and the like, by recognizing a requirement that it has some connection to you. And that brought us to the question of airplanes. Rav Asher Weiss's strong statement, as we all understood, didn't need much convincing not to light in airplanes, first and foremost, because of the danger and the illegality. Second of all, because it doesn't have potential of lasting long enough anyway, but thirdly, because it's not considered to be your residence. And even those poskim who thought it was reasonable to light on a train, it could be the train is more one's residence than a cramped seat on an airplane. We discuss also soldiers out in the field, which most poskim, except for Tzitz Eliezer, thought it doesn't make sense to light out in the field. And we discussed the whole machlokas Abul Yashiv and Reb Chaim Kanievsky against Rav Asher Weiss and others. Should we say someone who doesn't have a house should buy a house or should rent a house in order to fulfill it? And the Shiva Yeis pointing out that's why we have this extra bracha for those who don't have those houses, so we wouldn't say that you have to buy your own house. We mentioned the Yitzchak Zilberstein, who notes that it wouldn't help to declare your house ownerless because it's not about ownership. I should add, by the way, he does add that if you're going to build an illegal house, since there's an illegal room in the house, he says you would not be able to fulfill Hanukkah lighting in that room. So first of all, because it's illegal and stealing. Second of all, because they're going to destroy it anyway, so it's as if it doesn't exist. But that's an interesting discussion as well. And we mentioned Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach also noting that we don't use the normal rules of ownership in order to define a house, which is why as well you have somebody who's visiting can chip in with some token amount of money, and that's going to give them a connection, even though they're clearly not going to own the house in that sense. And we talked about some possibilities as to why the mitzvah is associated with the house, the Pnei Yoshua's suggestion that it's because of the persimonisa facing the public through the house. We discussed Rav Bleich's suggestion that perhaps, as the Rambam indicates in his letter, that there was a gzeira on houses specifically, you shouldn't close your door because you shouldn't do mitzvos in secret, so now the houses celebrate that they are free of this decree. And then we looked a little bit differently at the fact that it's not just about the house, it's about the family, and we find that in addition to the concept of shlichus, we seem to have even wider parameters. Perhaps an onen who's exempt from mitzvos can light on behalf of his family, perhaps a child who's not yet bar bas mitzvah can light as long as they understand what they are doing on behalf of their family. And we find the notion of ishto kegufo, of spousal identity, being used here in a way that does not seem to be found in any other mitzvah, as Rav Dachovsky suggests, perhaps as a reflection of the nature of the mitzvah itself. We mentioned the suggestion of Rav Heschel Reisman that perhaps this has to do with the spiritual nature of Hanukkah in contrast with Purim, just like we find Purim having an obligatory Suda and Hanukkah not. Purim is a focus on a physical salvation, and that's all about the war. On Hanukkah, it's a spiritual victory, and in order to have spiritual victory and spiritual continuity, you need all of the family, you need all of the history, all of the connection, all of the legacy, and everyone coming together in order to uphold that identity, that culture, and that value system. And therefore, we're especially privileged to be able to take note of that in this context, and may we continue to only celebrate meaningful and effective Hanukkahs in the future. A wonderful Yom Tov. Sorry? So, Yashalta, the question is, does it identify to you, though? Does it connect to you? So that might be a problem. It could be a house as a building, but there's two parts of it. It has to be a house, and it has to have some connection to you. So he also mentions the Gezel component. But in addition to the Gezel component, he says it doesn't even have any lasting step. Yeah, a hotel is a different story. The hotel is a different story. But they also want to like the hotel.